This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 28 with Euro Purpose founder, Zephan Moses Blacksburg.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. Today's hosts are Layla Ramadian and myself, JC Preston. We're part of the gang at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people do passion-filled work and, more importantly, giving them the resources and community they need to help share it with others. Hope you all have had an awesome first week of spring here in Indiana. It's getting warm enough that Marie and I are regularly walking the dogs again, and frankly, I'm starting to get my energy back. I'm really starting to think that I'm going to need a second home down in the south somewhere over the winter months, because frankly, I need the sun. I'm like Superman in that way. Also, something else to note is that I was one of the photographers in the Scottish Shamrock Shuffle this past Saturday at Round Ball State there in Muncie, in Indiana. And it was definitely cool to see everyone else starting to get out there and moving, doing their, you know, 5K or 10K. We are officially doing virtual races through AMS now, so if you want to join in on a 5K, 10K, or even a triathlon here in the last part of April, you can do just that and get some cool swag sent your way from the event. So I'll be sure to include the link to this past week's pictures and a link to upcoming events there as well, so if you want to get on out there and get moving a little bit. Moving on to today's chat with Zephan, we got into detail about his book and where the idea of it came from. Also discuss his thoughts about the fad of entrepreneurship, the success he's had after hiring a business coach, and what it was like to be one of Pat Flynn's guests on the Smart Passive Income podcast. It's a really great talk, and I'm pretty sure you guys will get a lot from what Zeph has to say. Today's session is powered by HostGator. Let's face it, offline advertising is almost dead. You know, when I was back in AMS, we did a lot of paper advertising and honestly didn't get as much ROI on that advertising as we did on simply doing Facebook ads. When you do Facebook ads, that means you got to send them somewhere. And what does that mean? It means you need a website to actually have them land and, you know, buy from you. So there's so many choices out there these days that, you know, it's kind of hard to determine what you really need. I mean, do you need a one size fits all deluxe solution that I'm not going to name any names, just came out recently in the past month or so, or rebranded themselves? Or do you need something smaller that is more accustomed to what you need as you're going along? You know, there's a lot of different options out there. And frankly, with all the ways that there are to make your own site, there's really no reason not to have one for yourself. Anyone can make one, and in fact, it's really easy to do, especially if you're using WordPress. If you haven't checked WordPress out in the past 6 months or to a year or so, and some of the new themes that are out there, you might be missing out on a real bargain plan. I mean, frankly, it's no longer 2010 and 2012. Where you were looking at, you know, I think Thesis was very popular back then. Yeah, you're not doing that. That things have changed. So speaking of WordPress, did you know that it's rather easy to install with HostGator? It's simply a one-button install. That's it. Not to mention that they have what's called Optimized WordPress, which means that your awesome site will be backed up automatically and any hacked files will be updated as well, if that were to happen, which it kind of does. Personally, I'm a fan of their 365-day support via chat, phone, and email. And when I talk to them about one problem or another, we seem to get the problem fixed within the day. I mean, that compare that to a couple of days or a week, like some hosting services might take. So if that sounds like something you might want to go ahead and check out, you can do so via newinceptions.com/HostGator and receive 20% off your next web hosting order. So again, I'm happy for you to listen to what I think is a really good follow-up to Zeph's interview on the SPI podcast. His book is now out, and he's picking up some good momentum in his other work. Show notes, including links to his book and podcast, are also available from newinceptions.com/session28. And if you have questions for myself, Layla, or Zeph, send us an email at heyguys@newinceptions.com. So without further delay, let's get started with Zephan Moses Blacksburg. Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show. It's me, JC, joined today by Layla. How are you doing today, Layla?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great, great. Can't complain. It's going to be another warm day here in Indiana come Sunday, 60 degrees. So looking forward to that. How was your mini trip down to Walt Disney World for your mini? How was that?
Oh, it was great. I did my very first half marathon. I'm so sore, but today I'm actually feeling a lot better today. My back is not as intense, but I learned a lot from this first marathon.
Catching up.
Oh, yeah.
Catching up, I'm sure, in multiple different ways, health and work, I'm sure.
Exactly. But it was a lot of fun. I'm going to be vlogging about that really soon.
Yeah? Cool. Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to it. Awesome. So today, Layla, we're actually joined by a guest. I think you and a lot of our listeners are definitely going to be quite interested in and probably will be able to resonate quite a bit with. You know, he was recently featured on Smart Passive Income podcast as someone who is making big strides with his business. And in fact, that particular podcast, which happens to be SPI 202, we learned all about his path to where he is now. And after quitting his job at Apple Store in 2013, he became a freelance videographer and later did a few big time projects, including one that landed on the Philadelphia Eagles mega screen. And more recently, he's written a best-selling book called Life Rescripted, where he has his readers see their life as if they were looking at a movie script. And specifically, he's asked them if it would be something they're proud of living or if there is something that needs to be lived or experienced to make it even more complete. He's also doing more inner city outreach work with an organization called Mission Fit, where he's been able to change people's lives outside of business realm. And on top of all of that, he hosts a podcast called The Year of Purpose, where he talks about living a life of purpose and what it took to get there. So today, our guest is Zephan Moses Blacksburg. And hey, Zephan, how you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, JC and Layla?
Hey.
Pleasure having you on, man.
Yeah, totally. Thanks for having me here. And cool announcement just happened like 20 seconds ago. Got an email. My Audible recording for the book is approved. So the book is now an audiobook in my own voice.
Oh,
nice.
My gosh.
That's even better. That is cool. That is cool because it's always better when you have an author. Definitely telling you the story in their own voice. What was it? I think Tony Robbins a year ago, he had Money Book came out and he did the first chapter all through his own book. The only problem with that is because he did it and he had so much insight that the chapter ended up being like twice as long and it took an hour just to get through the first chapter.
Wow.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But first off, I mean, Zephan is a pretty unusual name. You know, it starts with a Z. Not many names do, let alone words start with a Z. But definitely memorable. Is there any story behind it? Like, were your parents trying to be cool or playing a trick on you? Or is it just common elsewhere and I just don't know about it?
Yeah, so it comes from a Jewish prophet named Zephaniah. So I actually go by Zephan, actually. But the original, if you read it in Hebrew, it's usually pronounced Zephaniah. And so every now and then people kind of like throw this French accent on it. But it's Zephan. And
okay,
you can just call me Zeph either way, because I don't even go by Zeph most of the time.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so Zephaniah, or Zephaniah, the Hebrew version of it, was a Jewish prophet, and there was this guy that originally owned a lot of the land in Baltimore, Maryland, where it's my hometown, and that's where I'm from, and his name was Zephaniah, and my parents happened to find out in some historical book, and they liked the name, and it just so happened that it had some Jewish history to it, so it stuck. But the funny thing is, the middle name Moses means drawn from the water. And that's because I was literally drawn from the water upon birth. My mom went into labor. Seconds later, I popped out feet first in the toilet, and I was delivered by the volunteer fire department from the water.
Wow. That is interesting. That is definitely a story. Jeez.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I don't even know about that much about my own birth. That's wow. Good job. Speaking of your entire name there, I do notice that you kind of use the three of them interchangeably amongst different things. So what brand are you currently going by right now? Because I've seen you use Zephan, Moses, Zephan Blacksburg, and Zephan Moses Blacksburg. Which one are you currently going with?
I always go by Zephan Moses Blacksburg when I sign anything, or, you know, even on my book, it has my full name. But, you know, everybody who knows me or talks to me just calls me Zeph, and it sometimes they come up with even stranger nicknames.
That's cool. Cool.
Well, it's a very unique name, and I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of your entrepreneur story was covered in Pat's podcast, which will be in the show notes. I'll be putting the show notes there. But I want to kind of go a little deeper into some of the things you covered there. And in fact, that particular chat, you talked about how you went into high school and college for video production. Layla and I both know that feeling. We were both actually focused in being engineers until, well, technically we weren't. And I don't know for one that you could actually go to high school to take a certain topic like that. In Indiana, we have certain levels of diploma, and I was barely an honors graduate. Can you remember how you got interested in video production? Was it something you always wanted to do?
Oh yeah, for sure. I had this little camera, toy camera, as a kid that, even though it was a toy, it actually took film. So this was back before memory cards and flash drives and all that fancy stuff. So if you're younger than like 24 right now listening in, yes, photos were taken on film at one point in time. And as I grew up, I got a video camera on my 13th birthday. So I had always had this interest in photography just in general. I'd gone through a couple of cameras just for still photography since then, graduated onto a video camera, this little Sony Handycam type thing. And we found out I went to a public school, but they had this odd sort of magnet program out of the school that not many people were accepted into. So it was a small class of, you know, like 15 or so people. And they just called it multimedia. And basically you had 3 years of it. It went through sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school. And you started at the very base level of graphic design, a little bit of web design. And our second year, you moved into photography, into video, into editing, into animation. And then your third year, you're really kind of piecing it all together. I think like at one point, the third year I went into, there was only one person who was able to get gifted and talented credit for that class on top of being this sort of magnet program. And that was me. Mm-hmm. You had to apply and go through this crazy process of saying, you know, you're going to come up with some cool project for them. And my idea was I had created this whole digital virtual map of the school back in Flash when we used Flash. And as you clicked on each room, you could see photos and like a little 360 video of the room. This was before Google was doing it, before GoPro existed. This was like before anybody was doing this. I kind of created this like virtual map of the school that they were using for a couple of years after that to teach their new teachers how to get around the school and what the classrooms looked like.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
That's cool. Wow, that kind of just blows my mind, because I remember back in Flash times, it was just like, whoa, you're actually making, like, what was that, Newgrounds and whatnot back in the day?
Yeah.
Wow, that's, so just, if anybody remembers Newgrounds, just think what he was describing during that time, having somewhat of a, something that kind of resembled Google Earth, for his school, right?
Yeah, and right, I back in the time.
Wow, that is cool. That is cool.
Oh wow. Okay, so you kind of went to like a magnet program, or in high school you have certain programs that have specialties. Like I had a magnet program for engineering in high school. So did you have? It sounded like you had something like that in high school, where you had an audio or digital curriculum.
Right. Like it was this magnet program within just a regular public school, and then on top of that, I was also entered into a program where you were actually able to opt out of half a day of high school if you would go to community college and get college credits. So I had gone into college with an entire semester totally like knocked out before I even stepped foot on a college campus.
Awesome. Kind of like dual credit.
Exactly.
You guys were so lucky. You guys were so lucky. So going back to your childhood right now, And this is going to be a little bit from the left field, but what can you remember what it smells like?
What it smells like. So, funny story, I can, because I actually live in my childhood house without my parents.
I moved
back into the home that I was raised in, and I live in that house now. So it smells exactly the same.
Whoa.
But yeah, I can still also remember very distinctly the smell for some reason of my grandparents' home in New Jersey when we used to go visit them. I can't really describe it, but like if I smelled it again, I could tell you like that was it.
Huh. Yeah, that's cool. No, I almost kind of curious in how did you just give your parents the boot, or how does that work?
When I was probably in elementary school, we had actually moved and kept onto the house that we had and rented it out for many years. So after college, when I moved back home and finally started my business, I actually moved into the house that we still owned.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Which is actually what I'm thinking about doing in the house that I actually grew up in. So got it. Cool. So kind of going back, kind of skipping forward here, well, forward from when you were a kid, but back from now, back in 2011, when you first started listening to Pat's podcast, at that point, he had been doing it for maybe a year. I think he started in like July of 2010. Do you remember the first episode you listened to, and kind of like how it made an impact on you?
I mean, I know I got started with a lot of his blog posts. I don't know that if I was in the podcast itself at that time, but like I remember very specifically, I worked for a marketer that many people may have heard of, Dan Kennedy. I worked for a company called GKIC, Glazer Kennedy Insider Circle, and I ran their video department one afternoon. Just kind of sitting there, I had an entry level position, wasn't making a whole lot, and I'm talking to one of my coworkers, and I said, it would be really cool to like start something on the side, whether it's a hobby or whatever it is. And he's like, well, have you ever heard of this guy Pat Flynn? And I remember, like, I can picture myself sitting in the desk having this conversation with him, and he showed me Pat's website, and I actually started a website a couple weeks later after just like reading everything that I could on his page. And it was called Rookie Video Pro. And I was trying to teach people how to shoot professional looking video through this website that I had built. And it was a niche site, and it followed, everything Pat said about putting — this was back when Google ads were like the big way of making money on your websites and putting Google ads in your content. And this is like before the days of being super concerned about opt-in rates and building a list. And it's crazy to think that, because it's just 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. 2011 is just, it kind of blows my mind, but sometimes how 5 years isn't just poof, gone.
Yeah.
So
I'm just listening and I'm just all in awe right now. So it's cool. Sorry. So Zeph, hey Zeph, I was wondering, how does it feel to come to a point where you've been interviewed and being considered by many to be one of the most influential leaders in our industry? Think about it. He's featured some pretty big names over the years. Do you feel like you've arrived to that point?
Well, I think an important thing to note, and this was something that I didn't even realize until the first time I had talked to Pat face to face, was we kind of put people on a pedestal in a sense of thinking that they're unreachable. You know, like, he's a normal guy. Watch his Snapchat, and what's he doing at 5 a.m.? He's going to the gym to shoot some hoops and run on the treadmill, right? Like, he's not, you know, drinking some miracle potion. He's not doing some crazy thing different than any other human being. So I think one of the big realizations, even before, you know, winding up on his show or anyone else's for that matter, was that all of these people are real people that have, you know, wives, husbands, careers, businesses, dogs, children. You know, they're no different from us on many levels. And so I think that when I first started to speak to him, you know, I was definitely starstruck, right? Like, I was in awe of what he had built for himself and his family and his life. I don't think that I made it, though, because I've learned that we really set this bar of, you know, I'll be happy if, or I'll be happy when. And we kind of set this bar of, this is where I've made it. And the problem is, we get there and then we're not happy. We're not, we don't feel successful. We don't feel like we've made it. And so I've tried to, and really worked through retraining myself to not think of, you know, I've made it being at any certain point in time, but more of like, it's all about the journey. It's not really about the destination, but it's totally a huge accomplishment that I've also had to step back and say, wow, you know, I really did work really hard towards this, and I built the right relationships, and I helped as many people along the way as I could. So I don't know if it's I made it, but it's certainly a really great milestone during the journey.
I see what you mean by when you say you don't want to tell yourself that you've made it, because you're still continuing to improve yourself or keep going, still reaching for the stars. And I think that's wise of you to say that, because some people do get that to that point saying like, oh, I made it. And then something else happens and they realize that they haven't made it and then they're behind. So how was what was the process like to get on his show? Did you contact him or did he contact you?
Yeah, so right after I had left my job working at Apple, which was in 2013, so this is fast forward 2 years from where I had first been introduced to him, I had made a couple of different blogs and different niches, made a little bit of money here and there. I, you know, probably was on his email list and got an email at some point and was like, you know what, I'm just going to hit reply and just tell him and be like, hey, man, I quit my job today and I have no clue what's next for me. I have no idea what's coming up. You know, I have a Jewish mother who's freaking out and threatening to kick me out of the house. And I mean, she wasn't that bad, but I'm just saying, like, that was the fear in my mind, right?
Right.
And so yeah. I basically wrote out to him and I was like, you know, I'm sitting here watching you do this. And I watched you make it possible. I watched you start from nothing, you know. And I don't think that that's a fluke. I don't think it's something that is unattainable. I think it's totally possible. So it was kind of like this letter of saying thanks, but also saying like, here I go, hope this works. And, you know, yeah. He wrote back pretty quickly, like within a day or two. And that was really our first correspondence. We didn't really stay up to date a whole lot since then. Might have, you know, tweeted back and forth a little bit or something, but we didn't talk again until Podcast Movement of 2015. And so that was a really huge podcast conference. And it really was just the night before the conference got going, he was like hanging out in a corner doing a Periscope. And, you know, everybody's like bombarding him. And I just kind of stood back a little ways and watched everybody do their thing. I didn't want to be the guy to rush in. And, you know, he's busy. He's got his own stuff. Of course, like, he wants to be as nice to everybody as he can. But I don't want to be, you know, that one guy to push him over the top and be like, oh, my God, I've got to get out of here back to my hotel room. And So I waited till kind of the dust cleared and just walked up to him and was like, hey, man, you know, I wrote to you a few years ago. 4 years ago. And I want to let you know that I had quit my job at Apple and now I run this business and here's what happened. And he was just totally shocked. You know, I'm sure he gets success stories all the time, but I think that because it was, you know, I'd been following him for so long, he was just totally surprised. And then later that night, I went to an SPI meetup at a bar and it was like pure accident. I was leaving the hotel and somebody was like, hey, you should come over here. And like the second I walk in, Pat walks in too and walks right up to me and is like, hey, you know, we should get you on the show. And so it has been this like combination of like luck, you know, right time, right place. But I think that luck certainly corresponds to the amount of effort you put into what you're doing. Like I can't say the stars just aligned, right? And I just walked into the right room. I think that it really was just, you know, I had put so much effort in and dedicated myself to what I was doing. And, you know, life kind of made this path for me that put me in the right place where I needed to be.
Nice.
I like how you said that. Luck corresponds to the amount of effort you put into. Really well said.
You know, going back to what you were saying there about that podcast movement, I actually remember when he was periscoping that particular, like what you were describing right there. I remember him being on the like the left hand side of the group, and he was like periscoping. I think it was John Lee Dumas that was on stage.
Yeah,
and yeah, that's kind of surreal because I know exactly what you're talking about, but. Yeah, no, that's cool.
So it sounds like you just had a really casual conversation with him. And did you prep to be on the guest, or did you just have you on the show? I mean, you know, like he said, when he said like, oh, let's have you on the show, like how soon after did he get you on the show? And how did you prepare for that?
So he had given me his card at the time and said, you know, hey, send me an email. And I figured that after that conference, he was going to get bombarded by you know, people contacting him and reaching out. So I waited like a week or so thinking, you know, let's let his inbox clear out a little bit and try to, you know, wind up somewhere above the fold within his inbox. And, you know, just reached out and thanked him again, because like as many people who heard the episode know, like, I had no clue he went back to his room that night before he gave his keynote speech and added a photo of me into his slideshow and called me out from the stage in front of 1,100 people. Like, I didn't even know what was happening. I was like on my phone and one of my friends texted me and said, dude, look up, look at what's going on right now. And I'm like, that's me on the screen. And what?
Wow.
On stage? So, I mean, I gave it some time to reach out to him and say thank you for that. And he had actually apologized when he ran into me during the happy hour. He was like, I'm sorry I didn't warn you about that. Like, I totally didn't prepare you for that. I'm like, no, that's really cool of you. And
yeah.
Now I got to live up to it.
Yeah. You put the pressure on me, man. Not the other way around. And I guess... at some point over email, we planned for something a month or two out. I think we recorded back in November, and it went live in February. So, you know, I think he pushed it back because he was launching Will It Fly. So he had a ton of things going on with getting his new book out. I think, you know, it was still just awesome beyond there. You know, I was really in no rush for that to come out. You know, it's been great to hear letters that have come in from around the world. I've gotten tons of emails so far just from people who have listened in and, you know, sharing their stories with me. Like, that's what this is about. You know, anybody can go listen to my story, but like for you to share your story with me is even cooler, because like now I can become a part of impacting that story and where it goes next.
Very well said. Yeah, I just, my job, I think 2 weeks ago, and it was such a surreal thing. I mean, I've been going through so many career changes and life changes that I've quit my job for the first time in my life, and that can be very scary. And like you said, you know, you had your loved ones freaking out for you and, you know, trying to say like, what are you doing? So it's kind of, I can totally relate to that, especially I have a Middle Eastern family. So that whole cultural traditional side can come out when something like that happens.
Yeah, so. Totally. And I think that you have to prepare yourself that they're not going to understand for a little bit. You know, I left in May of 2013, and it wasn't until I published my book in January of 2016 and like sent a copy to my grandfather where he was just like, I still don't know, like, I don't understand what you do, but you did good, kid. Like, that was the first time I got that sort of acceptance of like, okay, like, you're paying your bills, you're making money, you're doing good. And his exact words to me were something along the lines of, you know, never in, you know, my lifetime would I expect to be this close to a published author. And the fact that it's my grandson makes it all that much more special. And so, be ready for that. You know, people aren't going to understand for a long time. And the truth is they don't have to, because it's not up to them.
That's so true. And you become a little self-conscious at one point. Like, did I make the right decision, or was I just doing it because it was too hard for me? So sometimes you go to that moment of doubt when you don't have that those words of affirmation. But once you get to that vision that you're trying to achieve, it feels good to getting those words of affirmation from your loved ones.
Yeah, and I think that if we were ever to pick a point and say that's kind of like the I made it moment, I think that was as close as we were going to get, because, you know, I don't necessarily, I've definitely learned to not seek others' opinions. You know, like, I don't need someone else to tell me if I'm successful. As far as I'm concerned, if I feel successful, that's what matters the most to me. But I think that hearing that reassurance from someone so close to you, really adds to it, you know, tenfold.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Well, just, you know, it's always nice to have that support group. That's for sure. And that's one of the things that I hope to provide with New Inceptions, for sure. So anyway, thanks for the words there. So backing up a step, going back into the beginning of your entrepreneurial career, you know, you started off as being a freelance videographer, and obviously you've been involved with a ton of stuff, starting freelancing and then working your way up to writing, traveling, doing your podcast. But let's kind of go back to the freelancer aspect first. You know, you started with your first client, who was the one who busted you out of the Apple store. How did you get paying clients afterwards? That wasn't very clear on the podcast, so I was kind of curious what your process was.
Yeah, so as far as paying clients went, I have found that referrals have been the best thing I've ever done. Just, you know, asking someone you've already worked with and say, hey, do you know anyone else that I could help out, has been huge. I've also found that when you do good work, you don't even have to ask. People tend to refer you to other people as well. I started a lot with going to networking events and things like that, and I got a few clients from there. One of the biggest changes for me, though, was around like August or I think September of 2013. I took on my first business coach, and I paid $11,000 that I didn't have in my bank account. I took a huge risk for a 12-month-long coaching program. And one of the important things for me was to be connected with the type of people that I wanted to work with. And I've done so much work with the coaches, the marketers, the entrepreneurs, that, you know, why not be connected with a coach who is connected with all those people? So right off the bat, just from working and coaching with her, I got introduced to a whole new world of people, which made it a lot easier for me. But I think that really honing in on my business and working on it, and, you know, we had quarterly retreats, so we were, as a group of 10 to 12 of us, you know, meeting up somewhere for a 3-day weekend and sitting in a hotel room working on our businesses all weekend. I really can't put a dollar sign value on picking up that coach. But what I can say is hiring a coach in general is directly correlated to the fact that I went from Apple Store making roughly $30,000 a year to immediately in the second half of the year, because I quit in May, making the $15,000 I needed to replace that job, you know, what I would have made from that job. Mm-hmm. And the following year, I'm making $60,000. So I don't think that would have happened had I not hired a coach, had I not gone to networking events, had I not just done really good work and really held myself to a high standard. And then ask people, you know, for referrals.
Right. Okay.
So important.
Yeah. It's in referrals. I mean, those are people, you can't underestimate that. I mean, it's just, you know, what is it? It's called a client for life sort of thing as well. that, you know, if any kind of work comes up, not only are you good for the person that you've already done work for, but they will, you know, kind of go out of their way to tell other people about you sometimes.
So. Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had people who I haven't even worked with, but they just know that I do this, who have referred me to other people.
Cool. So do you still do video work? I mean, I know that Kayla Wojcik got away from it a little bit when he helped start Fizzle. But and, you know, now he's working with Pat and others and doing client based work. I mean, where do you fall in regards to that? I mean, is that what you're still up to or what?
Yeah, so I've still been doing video. One of the big things that's changed for me over the last 6 months or so is I've also taken on quite a few coaching clients who are trying to build things, whether it be a podcast or they want to know what I did for the launch of my book. You know, because the book sold 2,000 copies in the first week, I think. So, it's one of those things where it's like they hear that and that's what they want to have and they want to know how I did it. So I've done a lot of coaching along the lines of the different things that I've achieved, whether it's podcasting, the book stuff, travel hacking as well. But I've moved more into probably half my time is with video and then half my time has actually been with some of my private coaching clients. And it's really working through exactly what I talk about in my book, Life Rescripted. It's really about, you know, figuring out what that script is of where you are currently and where you want to go, and then having that person who can hold you accountable to getting there, because half the battle is really just getting there. And I think that as long as you have someone who can, you know, whether it's call you once a week or send you a text and say, hey, did you do that thing you said you were going to do? That really takes care of most of the problem.
So since the time that you spoke to Pat at the interview and you released your book, how did the whole process go for you about your book and how you decided to write it? And how did you know it was the right time to write it? And why now versus later in your career?
You know, the book was something where I had always thought, you know, at some point I'll write a book. And I didn't even think it would be about what I wrote this one about. So I've got like four or five more in the can because I kept getting ideas of what to write books about. But it really happened when I interviewed Chandler Bolt on my podcast. You know, he runs self-publishing school and he teaches people how to easily publish their own books. And right around the same time, I had like gone to a conference, you know, met someone else who ran a publishing company and just heard so many talks at once about publishing books that I was like, all right, there's definitely a sign here that this should probably happen. So I actually brought on Chandler and used his program to write the book. And a big, large chunk of it, probably 90% of it, happened over the course of 90 days. He really provided an awesome program to get most of the content out. In a fashion that I was used to. So much like podcasters do, he encourages you to talk and record it and have that transcribed and sent to an editor and work through it that way so that you're not trying to sit there, put pen to paper and winding up with a blank sheet. So that's been really an awesome experience. And I think that the 90 days was a little aggressive for me. So it got most of the book done, but there were still so many things on the back end for the marketing and the launch of it that I actually took another like 2 or 3 months before launching it on January 3rd of this year. So there were so many things from requesting interviews on other podcasts and really trying to ramp up the energy behind it to building a list from 0 to 1,100 people who had interest in it and wanted to know when it was ready to go and offering up, you know, a free Kindle opportunity for them to get a free copy of it for Kindle when it came out, and building a Facebook page. I actually did a live launch party here in my hometown of Baltimore, Maryland. We had 60 people actually pay for tickets because they got a t-shirt and a free signed copy of the book
Sweet.
And drinks and food. So there were so many moving parts that came together for the launch of the book. And I could probably write another book about how I did it.
That's cool.
That's amazing. Cause I've always wondered if you had to have this sense of, you know, to write a book, do you have to be a journalism major or someone who knows how to write really well? Because I've thought about writing my own book, but I thought, oh, I can't do it. I'm an engineer. I don't know how to write. I know how to do numbers. But what was his name? His name is Chandler?
Yeah, Chandler Bolt, B-O-L-T.
Okay, cool. Oh, cool. Well, I have one more question for you, and that is, so what were some things that went well and some things that you learned that could have gone better in this experience of writing a book and becoming an author?
Oh, man. So many things. When we were finishing up, one of the big things I did was I had kind of all the chapters pieced together and written, and I was getting ready to send what is basically my rough draft of the whole piece to an editor, and the first one didn't do as great of a job. There were still so many things that were messed up with spelling errors and things going on. And then once we finally got that cleared up and fixed, I then was looking for someone to format the inside of my book and design the inside of it. And like 2 weeks into working with the person that I was working with, they had some injury. I don't know if it was a car accident or what, but they had a neck injury and they just couldn't be at the computer. And they didn't tell me. So I'm sitting there for weeks trying to figure out, like, where's my book? Because as soon as you're done designing this, I'm uploading it to Amazon the second you send it to me. And so there were definitely quite a few things in the whole process that went a little bit wonky. And even down to the fact that the night before the book launch party itself was the night that I received the physical copies of the books, because it was around Christmas time and Amazon was slow with printing and shipping the author copies of the books. So I was down to the wire with that thing and really just kind of rolled with the punches. And it got to a point where we even had the final design and I started reading through it and found more spelling errors. And I was like, you know what? Good is good enough. And the whole point was to get my message out there, not to put out there that I'm some English PhD, because I'm not. And I think that people will understand and can forgive a couple of spelling errors for the fact that I'm really trying to change the way they think, not the way they try to read books.
Basically, you wrote a book and you didn't go through an editor or a publishing company. You self-published this book.
Yeah. So when it came time to publish, and you buy your ISBN number for the barcodes on the back of your book, you can either do it for free under Amazon and they just give you one, or if you pay, I think it was somewhere around like $200, I got 10 barcodes and I got to create my own publishing company. So my book is actually published under Year of Purpose Publishing, which Year of Purpose is the name of my podcast. So I now own Year of Purpose Publishing, and I've got another, let's see. So one barcode was for the printed book, one barcode for the Kindle. So I have 8 barcodes left, and any book I publish with those will be under Year of Purpose Publishing.
That's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about the fact that you use the name of your podcast for your publishing company. So let's just kind of jump into the podcasting world for a second. How long have you been doing that show?
Yeah, the podcast launched on January 27th of 2015, I think.
Yeah, I got it down to the day. That's cool.
Yeah.
And as far as being a successful podcast host, what do you think has been the most, the thing that has made a major contributor to your actual success?
You know, I think that there are so many podcasts out there right now where people just say, oh, it would be cool if I just sit around with my friend and we talk about random things. And I think that when you actually create a podcast with actionable content, and you're sharing stuff that people can care about, and it's not just your buddy came over and cracked open a beer. I think that's a huge piece of it. I think there's certainly a time and place for those podcasts, and some people do those right. But I think that there's this, I think it really has to be that you're creating something that people care about and that's going to change someone. And so, you know, if it's inspirational, if it's motivational, if you think to the stuff that we share on social media, you know, what's the content that goes viral? It's either the really funny, crazy stuff, or it's the stuff that's super inspirational. And so if you go one route or the other, that's where the success is going to come. And it's got to be something that you can really build a following behind.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I like that. Yeah, it's you know, one of the things that, and it's really interesting to me that, you know, you look at Pat's podcast, for example, for many, well, not for many years. I mean, it sounds like I'm talking about 10 years there, but for several years when he first started, I mean, his podcast was just tactics, 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 tactics. And now he's gotten a little bit more conversational, because when he was talking to you, for example, it was more of a flowing conversation, right? And yeah. I've also noticed that, for example, a lot of those, you know, two of my favorite podcasts that I listen to pretty regularly right now, well, three, you got the Fizzle Show, and then you have, what is it, Solopreneur Hour with Michael O'Neill, and then the third one that I listen to is Unmistakable Creative. And basically, those are all conversational pieces. And the reason why I kind of mold my podcast based on what, or this podcast based on what they do, is because you never really know what kind of chunks of information, or, you know, as they call them, nuggets, will pop out in just regular conversation. And it seems to me that a lot of times when you have those tactic kind of conversations, that it does come across as being a little scripted, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, the first couple episodes that I did, I had this script. And after, I think, like, the second one, I was just like, man, I hate this. I wasn't getting answers to questions because I was just asking the same question every time. But I have this strange theory, and the theory is about how and where people listen to podcasts. If you think about it, one of the best times for listening to podcasts is when you're driving in the car, if you're on your commute, or if you take the train to work, things like that.
As you saw yesterday when I sent you the picture, yeah. Kind of picture.
Yeah. And yeah. So, like, the theory is that,
don't try that at home, kids.
One of the biggest issues with driving is that people text and drive, right? And I was reading some psychologist who wrote about how one of the big reasons why people try to text when they're driving is out of loneliness. Mm-hmm. And when you're playing a podcast, especially when it sounds like it's a conversation that you've been welcomed into, I don't think you feel as lonely. I think it actually kind of cuts that out, because you're sitting there, you're focused, you're listening. So I have this weird theory about how those types of podcasts that you're talking about, you know, where it's just a couple people who are holding a conversation as opposed to this scripted type interview, I think that people enjoy it much more because they don't feel alone.
Right. Well, I could definitely see that. You know, personally for me, I think, you know, I've always kind of listened to talk radio for way before I was ever into podcasts. And when I started listening to podcasts, it was such an easy transition for me that I was just like, oh, I already appreciate this format. So, yeah, maybe that is it. I could see what you're saying there. You know, you've had a lot of top level people on your show. I would say that's very, very good for, as you know, again, starting in 2013 and you know, as come as quickly as you have to where you're at. I mean, how do you go about getting those top level guests, and what's the process of working with them? Or do you work with them all a certain way, or do you have, like, you know, maybe it changes per person, or how's that work out?
Well, for the first probably 6 months of being in podcasting, I'd actually used a service from someone that I recommend. She's awesome. I don't use her anymore for no bad reasons or anything like that. I just went a different direction. But Jessica Rhodes runs a company called Interview Connections. And so she actually just, you know, goes to all these conferences, meets all of these amazing entrepreneurs, and then connects them with podcasters that are looking to interview them. So that was a huge help from the get-go, where I got to meet some people that I probably wouldn't have otherwise met. And that really started this sort of, you know, domino effect of them introducing me to other people and really getting into a community where it's so much easier to contact certain people to find others for the show. So that was a huge piece to the success up front. Now it's just gotten to a point where I've realized that so many people are reachable and it's just a matter of figuring out where they reside. So the best example I give is, you know, I've been able to get responses from people like Gary Vaynerchuk. Haven't gotten him on the show yet, but Gary, if you're listening, let's make it happen. But I've been able to get responses because I focus on where they're at. So one of the big things is Gary is always on Snapchat and Twitter right now. And right. I think that you kind of have to just speak their language and speak it to them in the same medium that they're using to communicate. You know, Gary's not sitting there on Facebook. Gary's sitting there on Twitter and Snapchat. So if you want someone to respond, you really have to reach out to them in a way where you can kind of increase your chances of them getting back to you.
Right. Connect on their medium, so to speak.
Yeah.
One of the things that, so I've been in Fizzle for a while. And in fact, really since I restarted New Inceptions. And in fact, I host a local meetup here in Indy called the Fizzle Meetup. And one of the things, one of the courses that they have in Fizzle is by John Lee Dumas about, so it's kind of like a little bit of a insight maybe into podcaster's paradise. But one of the things that he talks about is kind of going to, like, say, iTunes, looking at people's lists of names, and then just, you know, taking that name, putting it on Google, do a search, looking for a contact, and just send them an email. And for him, that has seemed to have worked pretty well. I mean, and again, how long has John been around? A couple years, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I got John.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, I had him on the show probably very far back at the beginning, probably first 10 or 20 episodes. And that was just finding his email and just asking.
Really? Huh. Well, there you go. That's cool. So here's a question for you. Do you edit your own recordings, your own podcast, or do you outsource that yet? Or because it's very high quality, in my opinion. And personally, I'm still working on my editing skills a little bit, and I'm kind of turning into an audiophobe, but, and you know, yeah, there's some things that I'm starting to like hear that I never heard before until I started actually doing my own thing. So I'm just kind of interested in, do you do your own stuff or,
you know, I do all my own editing, because, you know, being a videographer, I already had a lot of the microphones and equipment to use. I actually later down the road upgraded, got a nice little soundboard here so I can control a little bit more of what's going into the computer. But, you know, I don't do a ton of editing. I don't go through and try to remove the ums and ahs, or, you know, if someone's like breathing heavy into the microphone, I keep it as natural as it would have sounded. And so, you know, I am cutting in the intro and the outro where if anyone tunes in, you'll hear I have like a little narrative with some music underneath of it. And I do kind of equalize the levels to make sure that the sound levels are as close to close to each other between the two people speaking throughout the episode. Right. But I really don't do a whole lot there. And I think part of that was making sure that I could set myself up to not have to spend a lot of time on that in the first place. You know, as videographers, we always say to shoot for the edit. And that means you're filming in a way where I'm not going to get back to the computer and have hours and hours and hours of footage to use. I just have what I need. And so I really try to do that with the episodes. So mostly I'm just popping it into my editor. I cut off the beginning and the end because there's a little silence or some talking at the beginning, and put my intro and outro on. And I mean, I think I popped off like 5 or 6 new episodes just this morning, just by doing that with less than an hour.
Wow. Well, and that's something else that actually comes up is that, you know, your particular format is, you know, you got, I think it's like, you don't really have anything much longer than 40 minutes. And then you release on Tuesdays and Thursdays. What made you go with that format?
Yeah, so I had started with just Tuesdays, and it really got to a point where I wanted to do it more. I was getting so many people to the point where I would be backlogged with recordings, and then everyone's like, hey, when's my episode out? And it was just like, 3 months from now. So I decided to just double up and get everybody caught up. And it just kind of stuck with me. You know, I was getting enough people in that I could keep doing that. And it might change as it goes. You know, I haven't really taken the time to sit down and say, okay, like, what days of the week is the podcast jumping? You know, when are people actually listening to it? So I might sit down here soon, you know, as we're just over the 1 year mark, really try to find when everyone's tuning in and how to best, you know, serve their needs and change it up as we go. But yeah, it was really just trial and error. You know, probably read that someone said Tuesday was a good day to release it and just went for it.
Okay. Tuesday. I like that. Yeah, I'm currently releasing on Thursday, and it seems that I get my jump over the weekend. And so it's like, okay, well, as long as I get it out before Friday. So
yeah, the other thing, too, is, you know, the Apple fanboy in me, Apple is notoriously known for releasing things on Tuesdays. Really knows why they do that. But so I was always just kind of under the impression that Tuesday would be a good day.
Yeah. So I was just listening to, before you came on the show, I was just listening to your podcast with Jordan Harbinger, and, you know, he's a really great guy. And in fact, I had a guest just a couple of times ago, Mike McApenlack, and he's out of Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia, right? Vancouver, BC. Is that one? That's where that is. And anyway, Mike and I were kind of talking about Jordan a little bit, and you know, one of the things that he was talking about on your show in specific was that, you know, going to entrepreneurship in general, you know, is getting kind of popular, but he was saying that he's getting kind of popular in a bad way. What are your thoughts on that and the advice he gave in regards to lining up a calendar and, you know, maybe what, I guess the question is what's your take on deep work? Have you ever heard about what deep work is by any chance?
I actually haven't. I mean, I would say that I think that Jordan in his episode had this really good point that entrepreneurship is this like trendy thing. And I don't think that it should be this fad because owning your own business has been around since having a business has been around,
right.
You know? So like,
right. Even farmers are business owners, right?
Yeah. Right. So like, I think that, he's very right, though, in that the way people are starting to look at it is it's almost like this, you know, it's kind of like how people say that the big box stores have ruined the holiday seasons because, you know, they start selling TV, you know, sales on televisions or electronics 30 days before Christmas even happens. I think that it's just it's really getting chalked up to be some crazy thing that it really isn't. You know, they're almost putting it on this pedestal to the point where it's just like, you know, if you become an entrepreneur, everything in your life just magically works and it doesn't work that way. So I think he had a really solid point with what Jordan was saying though.
And as far as your calendar, I mean, have you started implementing that yet or what? I mean, what do you think about how he just micromanages his days?
Yeah, I'm actually my calendar is pretty big for me because if you look at mine, it's totally jam-packed from the second I wake up until mostly when I go to bed. He went as far as to hire someone to manage himself. I don't need that. I have enough self-control there. But my calendar is really helpful to me, though, because it allows me to see where I can create space for myself. And it also allows me to reorganize and say, okay, like I've got 3 days in a row where it's jam-packed and I'm not doing a good job of taking care of myself. And I can be better at doing that in the following week by, you know, just blocking off this whole day and saying, you know what, this is my day to have a break and I don't have to do work today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. And, you know, actually that brings up what I was also asking about was the deep work. And deep work is actually something that a guy by the name of Cal Newport put together. And what it really is it's, he wrote a book called Rules for Deep Work. It's Rules for Focused Success in a Distracted World. And what he is talking about is that totally disengaging anything that can make, you know, that can take your attention away from what you're actually doing. And he says that in the CS department that he works in, and I forget what school he actually works for, but coders, for example, have to go into this almost a trance, or not a trance, but like a zone, right? That that's the only time that they can get things done. If they're having to reach for their phone or, you know, think about the different, all the different things that they have to get done during the day, they're not going to be able to get to the level of quality work that they're known for. And so I was wondering, I mean, do you feel yourself getting into the zone with all the different things that you have scheduled for the day? Or do you kind of feel yourself being like, oh, I know that's coming up. Duh, I have to do that.
I mean, I tend to jump around because I have this weird sort of like my productivity time is from like roughly 10:30, 11 in the morning until, you know, 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And then it really drops off until like 9:30 at night. And then I just wake back up again. And from like 9:30 at night until like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm super productive again. So for me to sit there and try to, you know, knock out a bunch of work for 8 hours straight and just be in the zone really doesn't work. I like to break stuff up. I like to do different things in my day and not do one thing for the entire day. So I think everybody works differently. You know, I think it's going to be different for each person's style. You know, what I do is obviously not going to work for someone who works in a 9-to-5.
Right. Well, and good luck when you have a, you know, significant other or you're married or have kids or anything like that too. So, I mean, you get one day and double work time, right?
Right.
So, cool. So, kind of going back, I mean, when you listen to different podcasts and, you know, they're always giving these tips and tactics on how to, you know, improve your life and all this sort of stuff, how often do you see yourself successfully adding those new strategies into your work life?
I think that the way I listen to podcasts is actually, it's almost like the opposite. I've been using it like Google recently. So like, you know, if someone's trying to learn how to tie a tie, they're either going to go to Google or YouTube and type in how to tie a tie, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, when it came to launching my book, I actually started going to the podcast app and searching for just book launch or, you know, self-publishing and things like that to find the episodes that I wanted. And when I found things that were related to what I was trying to research, I was implementing that stuff right away. I think that it was more this laser guided focus though on what I was already looking for, as opposed to just like, oh, you know, Pat put out this new episode this week for Smart Passive Income. They talked about this strategy, but like, if it didn't really apply to what I was doing at the time, then I wouldn't really think twice about it. So I've been using it more for searching for what I'm trying to learn in the first place and then implementing right away.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that, especially after being in the driver's seat for going on a year now. It's like, I have enough stuff going on in my day to day that I'm still trying to figure out. Let me fix those problems first, and then maybe I can listen to entertainment. But even when you get to that second part, it's like, I really don't have the state of mind to listen to any more related to work right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's cool. That's cool. Cause I'm just, you know, I think once you actually get started, things just change a little bit. So yeah, it's, what is that? Before you get there, it's information constipation is another word. Information overload, I think.
Oh yeah, and analysis paralysis.
Yeah, yeah. Those are things that, don't worry, if when you get started, you'll know what you need to find out more about.
Yeah.
So, actually, going on to getting started here, if you found yourself back in 2013, if you go back and say, you know, past DeLorean that he's going to get eventually and go back to 2013 and you were starting things all over again, what would you have done differently?
Ooh, it's tough to say that because part of me is like, you know, everything I did there is what got me to here. But I think that looking back, I probably would have relied less on things like creating a website. Like, I think I was so focused on putting out the best looking website with my portfolio stuff and, you know, worked on this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it's like, why didn't I just work on getting clients? Like, the website is not the thing that's going to bring in the clients. You know, the work and the referrals are. So why am I not working on those? So I think that's a huge thing, is understanding that like, it doesn't have to be perfect right out of the gate, and really not wasting time on the things that, that are shiny objects in a sense.
And you still consider yourself a freelancer, right?
Oh yeah, very much.
Okay. Because as a mediapreneur, you know, from my perspective, you know, trying to build up my listenership and then, you know, trying to build up my affiliates, just like, of course, like Pat did, I guess, again, going back to him as an example, you know, that's kind of more my thing is building, you know, putting out the podcast, making sure they're quality, at least what I consider quality, and just making sure that my listeners have a good experience. So,
yeah, I mean, and I think there's a fine line there, right? Like you could pay the best sound production studio to do the post-production editing on the podcast, mm-hmm. you know, and would it really make a difference in the user experience compared to like, you know, if you spend a couple hours on it and edit and clean it up? Probably not as much. But I think to that point, though, if you were to, you know, go use the junkiest microphone you can find and, you know, there wasn't good conversation, then obviously it would totally kill the experience for people, you know.
Right.
So I think there's kind of this line of like, you know, Dan Kennedy, my old employer, used to say good is good enough. And that mm-hmm. doesn't mean to say that you should be very mediocre. It's just saying that you have to know when it doesn't have to be perfect and be willing to just put it out there.
Yeah. And you truly got to know what is considered sucktastic too, because
I like that word, sucktastic.
Because I mean, you just like, for example, for a good majority of my first podcast on this show, and I think I just finally crossed over the threshold where I'm no longer using this old mic, but it was a headset for my old Xbox 360. And on a gaming platform, it sounds good. But when you start hearing it back to you played through, you know, your shows, it's like, man, what am I even, am I in a weird, some sort of weird room or something? It just so echoey and it just, So yeah, you don't know what you don't know, but yeah, I definitely think that I'm going to be eventually making a podcast product just for what I've learned, because, you know, you can take all that information that's out there and even then it's like, yeah, this is the one thing that I didn't necessarily find until after I'd already started. And man, I really would highlight that right there
with a,
you know, highlighter. So yeah, that's cool. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, in hindsight, you know, 2020, it's good. So. Cool. Well, I'm glad that, you know, you wouldn't change too much. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it's just really that perspective of knowing what has to be perfect and what can just be really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and frankly, you know, being a perfectionist is somewhat of a weakness anymore. So, yeah, especially when you get on the side. Next kind of segment is the rapid fire question segment. And the next question is, what are three things you'd want people to remember you by after listening to you on today's show?
Three things to have people remember me by. My name, it's unique.
Got that.
So there we go. That's one. I would say number two is certainly, knowing that this is a journey that's completely up to you. You know, I let so many things almost scare me out of taking the leap. You know, it's not really up to anybody else but you. So I think that's number two. And then number three is really just going for it. There is nothing much more than you can do than taking the risk.
Cool. Yeah. And as I just recently, again, I just found, and I'll put this in the show notes, there was a video that one of my old Upline sent me, and he's still a pretty good friend, that was of Steve Harvey talking to his audience in one of the Family Feud shows. And he basically is just talking and saying that, you know, have faith, take the jump, because until you make the jump, you're not living life for you. And so you have faith in what you want to do, whether it's a business or not, mm-hmm. but take that jump, and eventually your parachute will open up and you'll experience life in a whole new way, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's that was meaningful. It was like, man, no wonder he was given the okay This is Steve screwing up at Miss America or Miss Universe. Don't worry about it. Next question. Three favorite teachers, experts, or influencers in your life?
Yeah, definitely Alan Watts. Great philosopher. Has a awesome narrative that's been put to music on YouTube called If Money Were No Object. Really, really cool guy. I would also say, you know, the guy who convinced me to quit my job. Great,
yeah, I like
teacher
that guy too.
And mentored him to me. And then outside of that, I think that, man, that's a toughie. There's a lot of people. I really like Elon Musk as of late. It was really cool to see. There's some graphic floating around that says, you know, how much money he made from, I think, was it PayPal that he like started and sold or one of those companies started, he sold it, and he took the $200 million that he made and put it into, you know, Tesla, SpaceX, and he was totally broke again.
Wow.
And I think it's really cool what he did.
Yeah. His ex-wife was actually on Unmistakable Creative. So yeah, she was talking about a lot, and not in a bad way, just kind of talking about who he was and just kind of an insider's perspective, because who else is going to know you just as, you know, better than you do than, you know, someone that lives with you that much. So yeah, he's definitely an interesting guy. And I would definitely put him up there with good old Steve. So Steve Jobs. So next question is what does success mean to you, and how do you achieve that success?
I think success is kind of equivalent to happiness, because, you know, back to what we were saying earlier about setting that bar, you know, are you setting that bar that you reach it and, you know, the bar moves again and, you know, you're unhappy again? So I think that success really comes from, you know, are you happy with where you are and what you're doing? And if you're not, then it doesn't sound like you're being successful with life.
Cool. Yeah, I would definitely agree. Which actually leads to my next question, the last question. If people were wanting to have their year of their first year of purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Purpose? Okay. If people were wanting to live their first year of purpose, what are four steps that they could take in figuring out what that purpose of theirs is?
Yeah, I'm actually really glad you asked that, because a big part of this is in the book, but also in the podcast as well. I think that number one, you really have to sit down and be honest with yourself about your current situation and really write that out. Everything, every aspect of who you are right now. And then you have to go back through that in step number two and say, you know, which of these things is actually true? Because a lot of the times we make up the story of what's going on. And then number three is writing out where we really want to be in each of those aspects that you started with in one. Mm-hmm. And then four is kind of coming up with a game plan of how you're going to get there.
Wow.
I love that. That's awesome. Your book, if you say that this is in your book, it would be very good. I would say if anybody wants to get your book, they need to get Pat's book as well and get them together and read them together, because I think between the two of them, you'd probably get a lot of similarities that you'd definitely get a very good plan for moving forward.
Absolutely.
Well, Zeph, definitely again, appreciate you for coming on the show today. And where can people find a little bit more? Where can people find out a little bit more about you?
Yeah, so if they want to head on over to yearofpurpose.com, they can check out the podcast. We've got the weekly episodes there. And then also liferescriptedbook.com. We'll send you straight to the book and links to Amazon, things like that. And I'm all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Find me on there, and I would love to chat.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Zeph. It's really an honor to be able to speak with you, and best of luck to you. It sounds like everything's going great, and keep at it.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, appreciate it again. Thank you.
Thanks.
So there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, please tag us on Twitter at New Inceptions and Instagram at New.Inceptions. And let us know what you got out of it and what you're planning on putting it towards. Also, subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. As mentioned before, the chat show notes are available by going to newinceptions.com/session28. And if you want to find out more about Zeph, this week's show note extras have you covered. If you're interested in hiring Zeph, do some video work for you. I'll have a link up to his video business called ZMB Media. If you're interested in listening to him more, or rather seeing him, he was on another podcast hosted by Tara Magalski back in October 2015. Note that this is actually before his interview with Pat. Next up is the podcast with Pat himself. I'll have a link for you there. And finally, a podcast by Alex Harris where Zeph talks a little bit more about his book. This particular podcast was recorded in December, so you'll kind of notice a little bit of a chain of the launch of the book, and I think you'll get appreciation of that sequence of events. Also, as a bonus, I'm going to include a presentation of Zeph's back from 2014, where he talks about overcoming your fear of being on a camera. And to be honest, some really good pointers in there. Even though the sound is a little shoddy, I got to tell you that he recorded it from someone else's webinar, teleseminar software, and so there might be some issues there, but for the most part, the content's pretty rich. And again, I want to thank Zeph for being on the show, and really looking forward to what kind of success he'll have in the future, and I'm sure in the not-too-distant future. Next week's show, Layla and I talk with John Thompson, founder of Veer Digital here in Indianapolis. I met John in an e-commerce meeting about a month ago, and he was talking about SEO and backlinking. You know, these are things that I heard from Pat a couple years ago, but wasn't too sure if it had as much importance in today's internet marketing realm as it did back in, say, 2010, 2012, maybe even 13, due to all the modifications that Google and other search engines have made to their algorithm over the years. Apparently, there's still a need for his services, and we talk a little shop. Specifically, we talk about what SEO and SEM means. We get into how much of what he does is an art and how much is an actual science. And we also get to dive into a little bit about his niche side project, which I'd tell you about right now, but still being worked on a little bit. So check us out next Thursday for that show. Until then, head on over to the show notes found at newinceptions.com/session28. Again, there's where you'll find the notes for everything we covered today. And as always, thank you again for sharing the show. We love that we're making enough difference for you guys to pass us around. The reviews mean a lot, too. If you haven't already, please subscribe and leave us a review on whichever platform you're using, iTunes, Stitcher, and again, SoundCloud. And again, beyond making us look good, it also helps new people find the show. And honestly, it just makes us feel that we're actually doing some good. So thank you in advance. So that's pretty much it for this week. Go check out the show notes at newinception.com/session28 if you want to get some more content from Zeffen. And until next time, keep on doing the work that you're meant to do, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.